Hi, this is L.L. Kirshner, and you are listening to Book Talk on Radio St. Pete. In today's episode, I will be speaking with Tara Lush. We are two homegrown mystery writers, both of us writing a historical suspense. Well, we're not both writing. I'm writing historical suspense. She's writing cozy mystery. And we're going to talk about how Florida inspires us and shapes our series, our publishing journeys, and the quirks of writing, I don't know, mystery. Hi, Tara. It's good to have you here.
Hi, LL. This is a fun and new place for us to chat.
Right.
It seems like we've chatted in coffee shops all over town.
That's right. I want to first start off by reading, I'll read both of our bios, but I will start with yours. Tara Lush is an RWA Rita finalist. That's Romance Writers of America. That's a big deal. An Amtrak writing fellow and the winner of the George C. Polk Award for Environmental Journalism. She also writes contemporary romance set in tropical locations under the name Tamara Lush. For many years, she was a journalist with the Associated Press. Tara is a fan of vintage pulp fiction book covers. Me too. Sinatra-era jazz. Me too. 1980s fashion. Yes. Tropical chill. Kombucha. Gin. Tonic. Seashells. iPhones. Art deco. Telenovelas. Street art. Coconut. Anything. Yes. Strong coffee and newspapers. She lives on the Gulf Coast with her husband and Shih Tzu. And for those of you who don't know me, I am L.L. Kirshner, and I am an award-winning screenwriter and author of two memoirs. Also, the historical suspense series, The Queen Pin Chronicles. I'm currently working on my next series, Steel City Crimes, about crimes set in Pittsburgh, but it's more amateur sleuth and suspense than police procedural. Anyway, if you've read me, it's no surprise that I was once simultaneously the bridal editor for a society rag, dating columnist for an alt newsweekly, and religion editor for an LGBTQ+ paper. I currently live in St. Pete with my favorite husband and our best boy, Hartley. You can get the prequel to my series, The Queen Pin Chronicles, The Debutante, The Making of a Queen Pin, free at my website, llkirshner.com. And now that that's out of the way,
let's... I love your bio. Your bio is the best. It's so diverse and fun.
Oh my gosh, I love you for saying that. I always feel like, what am I doing with this bio? But
I ask, what am I doing with my life sometimes?
Well, let's get into it right now. This is what we're going to be talking about. But really, it is interesting because when I first met you, you were writing romance and I was working in the memoir genre. And I will tell you in a bit why I put it in that way. So let's talk at that point in your life when we first met. This was what, 2016? Did you ever imagine that you would end up writing about Florida when you first started out?
Well, actually, a lot of my romances were set in Florida. All but
that's right.
One was
Miami,
set in Florida, Miami, and Orlando, and mm-hmm. other. And then I wrote a 5-book series, kind of set loosely in a place like Gulfport, called Paradise Beach. But really, I always knew I wanted to have Florida as kind of a secondary character. It works better, I think, in mystery. I think that Florida lends itself to mystery.
Florida is a mystery.
Florida is a mystery. And since I was a journalist, I covered a lot of crime in Florida. So it made actually a lot of sense that I would write about crime. I just kind of didn't necessarily want to at that time because I was writing about so many terrible things, you know, like mass shootings and executions and just terrible, terrible stories. None of them ended happily. So that's why I sort of started out in romance, was because I love the genre. And I also wanted to write a story that ended happily. And I wanted to write about like women, difficult women who deserved love, because all women deserve love and affection and caring. And even difficult women do too. What I did find was that I was spending a little more time on the setting than would probably be advisable in a romance. And I also realized I was putting in some really quirky details and some humor. And so I decided to merge that with my crime background as a crime reporter, and I started writing mysteries.
Well, we'll get into that more too, but I will say I certainly did not imagine when we first met that I would be writing about Florida. And you can ask me questions too. When we first met, I was actually in St. Pete on a as part of the book tour that I did for my first memoir, which is about my life in Qatar. And I had begun writing the second memoir, which they always advise, start writing your next book while you're, you know, promoting the first book, or write as soon as you finish a book, get on to the next
one.
Such
a simple task.
It right. It's nothing. And I had the idea for this memoir for some time, and really was going through a lot as well, because my mom died, and then I didn't actually plan to ever move to Florida. I just bought a condo here, sort of. I was thinking it'll be an investment. And then the guy that I met while I was here, well, I'm married to him now, so I ended up staying. So I never had like a farewell New York, like nothing like that. I just ended up here. And I never thought I would even stay.
And you really embraced St. Pete. You really threw yourself into the literary community. You met so many people. You did the story.
Oh, yes.
The true stories. You did a lot, and you really embraced it. And then you got into the history of St. Pete.
Right. Well, how can you not? I mean, it's so weird.
It is weird. And it is pretty wonderful. There is a lot of really interesting history here.
Right. There are very interesting characters. There are now, and there always have been. And I think that's because the Florida climate is so extreme, and it just attracts people who maybe are also extreme. I don't know.
I think that Florida, University of South Florida professor Gary Mormino put it best. There's like a Florida dream, and there are people who, and I write about this, it's kind of an ongoing theme in a lot of my books, about Florida as a place for reinvention. Mm. And I think that everybody, unless you're born here, a lot of the people who come here are reinventing themselves in some ways. And I think that that is a really I think that's a really key theme, especially in mysteries, especially when you have amateur sleuths and people starting over. I think that's a really key theme. Florida lends itself to that.
But I think a lot of people who vacation here think about reinventing themselves in Florida.
Absolutely.
I wonder, however, because this is what I found, because I was dating when I first moved here, and everybody in the dating pool, it seemed like they just couldn't wait to retire. They were just trying to slide through to retirement. And I was like, Jesus, is Florida where ambition goes to die as well? Like, the first thing someone said to me was like, it's not God's waiting room anymore. I was like, except for ambition. I wondered, is that what it – I think that you're right. I think that actually there is a wealth of people, and maybe the kind of people who go to a computer website when you have so many ways to meet people are that kind of person. I don't know. I did end up meeting that guy on a computer website, you know, on a dating website. So who knows? But and he was emphatically not that way, which is one of the reasons why he was a standout chap from the start.
He's a very standout chap, I have to say.
I'll tell him. So tell me then, besides the fact that it's a place for reinvention, how else does Florida come through as a character in your books?
I mean, I think there's always this push-pull of the past and the present in Florida. A lot of the themes in my books, maybe not in my current series, which is more paranormal, but in my books, a lot of the development versus the natural resources of Florida, which obviously I think we should be able to all agree that have not been protected by the people who should protect them over mm-hmm. decades, over probably the eternity of Florida's history, really, Florida's modern history. But that push-pull, and the push-pull of nature, that nature is always encroaching upon us, and the wildness of it, and that's sort of part of my book, Gator Queen. I have a contemporary cozy mystery series. It's a little edgy cozy, more of like a rom-com mystery, but sort of the heroine is a gator trapper, and she's seeing that wetlands and what places that were once wild when she was growing up are now subdivisions.
Strip malls and subdivisions.
And I think that that lends itself to a lot of tension, a lot of potential narrative tension and tension that you can just immediately work in. And it also lends itself to a lot of villains. You know, it's really easy to make a developer a villain because they are.
Yes. Sorry. So, but I also like to use Florida almost as a mirror of internal moods as well. I mean, because one of the weird experiences that I've had here is how rapidly the weather changes, or how violent the weather can be. I mean, I find the weather really reminds you who you are in relation to Mother Nature a lot.
I think there's, yes. And I think to that point, and you and I were just walking over here and we were looking at a building that is new and we couldn't figure out what was there before, even though we've both been here for years and years. And it's like Florida is this place where you go and time sort of stops. I've been here 25 years and really, wow. I still feel 29.
Like a newcomer?
Yeah, I still feel like a newcomer. I still feel like it's an endless summer. And the things that, there's no real history. I know there's plenty of history in Florida, but to look at it and to live here day to day, it doesn't seem like there's history. It just seems like whatever is here is in the present. The future, obviously, no one's caring about it because if they did, we wouldn't be paving over everything here. And the past, well, that's been paved over too. So it's
But that's why I love to write about the past.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. No, there's fascinating stuff of the past,
right.
But a lot of it in reality is lost.
So it's very lost, especially women's history. And I don't think that's necessarily unique to Florida.
Right.
I think a lot of women's stories have been drowned out by the media landscape, which just tends to favor male heroes. And, you know, it's also seeped into AI. I could go on a whole other thing about this. But the patriarchy is already firmly embedded in AI.
Yes.
We could discuss that in another episode.
Yes.
At any rate... yeah, I find that Florida is one of the best backdrops I've ever worked with. Although I am looking forward to working with Pittsburgh in my forthcoming series because it's also a very weird place. But it was weirder in the 90s than it is now.
Interesting. I don't know much about Pittsburgh. I'm from the Northeast. I grew up in California and New England, but I don't know a lot about Pittsburgh or Philadelphia.
I think one of the interesting things about Pittsburgh are the people who live there. You have some real specific characters, unlike any I've ever met elsewhere. And, you know, it has an incredible reading community. They really turn out for books there.
Yeah.
So let's now talk about how both of us switched genres. I mean, I do want to talk. You write across multiple genres. And when I made the switch from writing memoir into fiction, I mean, I started in fiction. I never really got any traction there. I was sending stories to The New Yorker. It never happened for me. Not yet.
That's so brave. I've never done that.
And then life events conspired to really force me toward the personal narrative lens. And
that's also brave.
Yeah, and I hope to never have an interesting enough life again for that to happen. But I really felt like those stories would not have been done justice by writing them as fiction. And I think, as I've said this many times, in your presence anyway, when I did write a character into Havana Girls that was most – she had some experiences most similar to my own. That's what I got most reaction from beta readers saying, I don't think that's very realistic. Meanwhile, I never got that response from my memoir because I bet by the time you get to those stories in my memoir, you're just like, oh, of course. No surprise there. But anyway, this book, it's a historical suspense, which was a challenge because I had been writing – even when I wrote fiction, I had just written short stories. I didn't know if I could write a full book. Really hesitated. It was during COVID, so I decided to write the book. But then when it came down to, you know, pulling the trigger and figuring out what I was going to do next, I was like, who's going to come along for this ride? Did you have that when you switched from romance into the mystery, cozy, urban, paranormal? If you want to go through what your series are, I think that's a good start.
So I started out with contemporary romance. I wrote really spicy romance. And then, you know, I decided that because I was writing all of these sort of more mystery elements and these more sort of these funnier, lighthearted elements, I knew I wanted to continue writing with A Happy Ever After. I think that, like you, you've talked about how events of the nation and the world have inspired you to write Florida Girls, Havana Girls, and Vegas Girls.
Mm-hmm.
Events also inspired me to do that because I felt like there is sort of a lack of justice in this world on many, many levels, not just from the very top, but even local justice. And I just felt like I wanted to write a story that ended well and that ended with the person who perpetrated a crime or did wrong. I wanted them to be served justice, not in like a vengeful way, but in a more quiet way, in the way we all hope justice is served. And so that's kind of where I was starting from with Cozy Mystery. And my first series was called the Coffee Lovers Mystery Series with Crooked Lane Books. It was about a laid-off reporter turned barista, and then she investigates crimes on her tiny Florida island. I had a blast writing it, and all of my reviews were really, really good in ways that my romance reviews were not. And so I just decided, why not go all in on this? And that's
well, as I someone went. Who loves justice and coffee, I love those books. But I actually want to add, that's sort of what compelled me to create this from a standalone into a trilogy of books, because I do have this problem with reality, which I want to write fictional stories where things work out, but there are also certain things that I think I didn't want to go against that grain. So, for instance, you know, the mafia did not disappear at the end of Florida Girls. They entrenched themselves in Vegas and Havana, and I wanted to come up with a way for these women to really win, and nobody ever knew, really. I wish it was a fully true story. There were a lot of true stories in there, but anyway, that's where it lands, because I needed an HEA in my series.
I think that's the beauty of historical fiction, too, is that you can be a little more ambiguous at the end. You can leave things maybe a little more open-ended, and you can – it's okay that there are still some elements of darkness and evil in this world. In Cozy Mystery, you really can't. I mean, that is a genre where you really have to wrap up, you know, all of the threads.
I actually address that directly in this book, where the character is – at a point where the sort of like, yes, my Padawan, there will always be wars or battles to be waged, but just remember, you know, the tide of time is. I'm not paraphrasing my own work. I'm the worst at quoting myself. Cannot do it. But it's essentially
the moral
that idea.
Arc of justice is long.
Exactly. Yes. But yes. That doesn't mean that you stop, which is, I felt like, the message that I needed to hear right now.
Absolutely.
Like, just got to keep, you can only do what's in front of you and what you think is right.
Right. Yeah, I understand that. You know, the series I'm writing right now is actually a paranormal mystery series. It's about witches in Florida in a place that's a lot like Casadega, which is the psychic capital of the world. And everybody in this little town is...
That place makes an appearance in my memoir.
Ooh. and I love the idea of that. And I also, I've really tried to double down on female friendships and found family.
Yeah.
And that has resonated deeply with my readers, who obviously are women, you know, who are elder millennial Generation X age. And I think that especially post-COVID, this idea that we are all sort of isolated in our homes with our devices and our TVs and our screens, we are crying out for connection. And I love when my readers say, you know, oh, it's like visiting friends. I can visit my friends in this world. And I love that. Like, that is such a comforting thing.
Do you want to know what one of my favorite reader comments was? I thought you were much older. Because I think she thought that I had sort of lived through these events, my takeaway from it.
Right.
Either that or she just thought I should be old. But but I felt like I had created that authentic of an experience. And I just warmed the cockles of my heart. Didn't like so much is when I first took a bunch of the books to the post office to mail out advance copies. And I was telling the postman, like the guy behind the counter, I was telling him that it was books for this Florida Girl series that took place in St. Petersburg about this troupe of swimsuit models who went on a war bond tour, and then they end up taking on the Tampa Mafia. And he was like, oh, were you one of them? And that did not feel so good. I was like, no.
Oh my goodness.
Maybe he thought Vietnam War. I'm still not that old.
I think that there are people who, like younger people, maybe don't have the reference point of World War II that like Gen X does. Because we grew up listening to stories from our parents and grandparents about
Right. Okay, so this is just for fun, before we close things out. If our main character, so you got to pick a book. Which one of your main characters do you want to put up for this?
I think the first one, the Coffee Lovers Mystery Series.
Okay. All right. Which character you're going to?
Lana Lewis.
Lana Lewis. And she is?
She is a former journalist turned barista.
What's her, like, age and thing?
She is in her late 20s, early 30s.
Okay. And she's single, reinventing herself?
Single, reinventing herself. She's sort of starting a thing with the police chief.
Spicy.
Who is going to stop being a police chief at some point and become a charter boat captain.
But she doesn't know that yet.
Not yet.
All right.
Well, at the end.
Well, listen, they can both meet at this diner. We're going to pretend it's a world where my 18-year-old Thelma Miles, mm-hmm. fresh off the bus from Keokuk, Iowa, shows up in St. Petersburg, and she goes into Lana Lewis's coffee shop.
Yes.
Even though they're separated by 4 decades.
Yes.
We'll pretend it's all in the same decade, okay, yes. And Thelma's 18, and she's living in whatever, 2010. When did mm-hmm. those books come out, The Grounds for Murder?
5 years ago.
2020.
Oh, it was okay. The year of COVID, yes.
2020. Yes. So they meet for coffee. What do you think would happen? What would their interaction be like?
I think Lana would want to do one of two things. Lana has like a very hidden yet deep motherly instinct, and so she would want to make sure that this younger woman was okay. She would probably offer her a job at the coffee shop because there everybody would be thrilled to have somebody enthusiastic.
Well, that would change the whole trajectory of Thelma's life.
And I think Lana would want to write a story. I mean, if it was later on and she was already doing the swimsuit modeling, I think Lana would want to write a feature article for her, for the local paper.
But if she offered her a job.
Yes.
I suppose we could pretend it's a little bit later and she's already been accepted as a swimsuit model.
Yes.
But I feel like it would be – it could go one of two ways. Either she wouldn't take that job and her life would be different, or she would take that job and she would call upon Lana with her journalistic know-how and grit to help report on these baddies.
Exactly.
And she would get it done.
Yes. And in the Coffee Lover series, there is an undercurrent of – It's kind of like a Florida island, not dissimilar to Gulfport or the Keys, where everybody is a little laid back. And, you know, Lana, when she was a kid, found square grouper bricks of marijuana while cleaning up the beach with her class. So
I was trying to figure out how to get square grouper into Havana Girls. I just couldn't do it.
I feel like that's really like a 70s term.
Well, Havana Girls, it's 1978 Miami. Okay, yes. But it's also, I think it's a Gulf term and not an Atlantic term. But although I could have had it be it's something from her childhood.
I love the term square grouper.
I do too.
It's just... In fact, I have in multiple of my books, there are many restaurants named the Square Grouper. At this point, it's a franchise in all of my books, the Square Grouper.
We'll be looking for that restaurant from you the future. Like Doc, what is that?
Randy Ford's? Like if my books get as big as Randy Wainwright's and Doc Ford, we'll have the Square Grouper.
So where can listeners find your books?
You can find me on Amazon. You can find me at other places, other ebook platforms. And some of my books are at Barnes & Noble also, and at your local indie bookstores like Tombolo Books here in St. Petersburg, or at TaraLush, TaraLush.com.
Are you selling direct on
TaraLush.com? That has the links to everywhere. I'm not selling direct yet.
Yeah, I have links to all of my books on my website, llkrishna.com also, and they're available at all those same places. So thanks for giving that list. This has been our episode of Book Talk. It was our inaugural episode. What did you think about it?
Loved it. Thank you for having me.
Should we have a bonus round here and talk about the Chicago Times list of best books for the summer, including what was that one? The Last Algorithm. I was like, how did nobody notice? How did that not get flagged?
Yeah, I don't. You know, I worked in newspapers for decades, and especially the AP. The AP was just a stickler for fact checking.
Yeah.
Any nouns, names,
numbers,
places, titles,
anything,
movie, you just double check them.
Right.
And there were editors double checking me.
Double checking the double checking. Yes.
So how that passed through, although I will say this in the defense of that newspaper, I did look this up actually.
Mm-hmm.
In 20, 20, 2007, the Chicago Sun-Times had around 350,000 subscribers. Today, they have 57,000. It used to be one of the biggest newspapers in the nation. That particular article was in a supplement. It was not in the main newspaper.
Okay.
So it was in an advertising supplement. So the newsroom probably had nothing to do.
Oh, it was in an advertising supplement.
It was, you know, those advertising,
yeah.
Like,
I know what you're talking about. Like, yes, like get your beach on. And
yeah, and it's like an advertising vehicle. So the people, they obviously cheaped out and went through King Syndicate. And they got a syndicated column that somebody somewhere in the world, who knows where, probably not even Chicago, wrote that. So
generated.
Yeah,
they pushed a button.
They did. So
yeah.
This had nothing to do with the journalists. So I would be, in their defense, I think that, yes, the paper did do a bad thing, but don't blame the journalists.
Well, I don't blame the journalists, but I do blame the editors.
Absolutely. And or whoever was in charge.
Because I also started off as a journalist. I did not last. My first murder was my last. Like, I couldn't handle it. Having to interview people right after their kid was killed,
yeah.
I was like, this is appalling.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks for the bonus round.
Thank you.
Bye, Tara.
Bye.